Project Independence is the Aging in Place initiative of the Town of North Hempstead. One of the many services we offer is transportation for food, shopping, and medical visits. Call 311 or 869-6311 to get more information or receive services. Welcome back to Senior Talk Radio here on 88.1 FM and WCWP.org. This is Project Independence and you. I'm your host, John Ryan, and my co-host today is Hal Bach.
Happy to be with you, John.
Thank you. And we're talking with Deborah Costa, who is the Emergency Management Specialist and National Preparedness from the National Preparedness Division of FEMA. And Deborah, in the beginning, told us how she basically got involved for a short period of time, and that's 6 years ago. And it's tremendous because it's people like that that I always turn around and say they own the job. It's not like, you know, you were forced to do it and you're waiting for your pension. I have two questions, Deborah. One is, in reference to people making preparedness kits, do you have how often should they be reviewed? Meaning, like, the stuff goes bad. Sometimes I go into the pantry and we take out something that we bought a year and a half ago, and I didn't. I was like, oh, my God, I didn't realize this is back there that long, and you have to throw it away. Is there some sort of an acute thing that you have that gets people to check every, whether it's 3 months or 6 months or whatever?
Well, FEMA recommends updating the kit every 6 months.
Oh, okay.
A good rule of thumb is when you change the clocks, check your kit.
Okay.
Right? Because you do that, right? You do that in the spring and you do that in the fall. So twice a year you're updating it. Most of the food you're putting in there is going to be in cans or granola bars or whatnot, and they're easy to swap out. You're going to check your batteries, things like your flashlight and your toothpaste and, you know, your documents and your cash aren't going to go bad. So it's very easy. Once you have your base kit, there are only, a handful of items that you're swapping out.
I agree. And I like that trigger thing. See, I need that reminder, and I would, you change the clock. That's a perfect thing versus saying, oh, I'm going to remember June 25th or some ridiculous date. And the next thing for me, it's July, it's August, September, and then the storm comes and I didn't do it. In your papers, you have make a plan. And I want to go over that with you because I think so much of it's important. And again, people do not pay attention. One of the first things is create a personal support group or support network.
Yes. So especially if you are dependent on others, not all seniors are able to get around as easily as some others. So they may have people delivering food to them, delivering services to them. So they should create a plan for and include those individuals. So they should contact if they're getting, they're getting oxygen delivered on some sort of basis. They should communicate with that company and understand what is their plan in case of an emergency also. And they should know that, you know, if there was an emergency and you needed to evacuate your home, that you would typically be going to your daughter-in-law's in, you know, West Hempstead or whatever the case may be. You need to have these conversations in advance.
Okay. I thank you for that because support network is a very simple statement, but what you're talking about takes it to the next level, which is it's significant, and you don't pay attention to some of these things. Within that daughter in the next town, say, you have a family communication plan. That, I think, is interesting because at 9/11, and who was preparing for 9/11, my oldest daughter was just starting NYU after being homesick with cancer for a year. So her first day of school, which is supposed to be like, whoopee, and then all of a sudden I'm at work and you see the first plane, you see the second plane. And me, to be honest with you, having no concept, I'm thinking the tower could tip over. Will it hit NYU? I mean, just, you know, the stuff that goes through your mind.
Sure.
And we didn't hear from her. We didn't hear from her until that night. And when we did get her, she was walking downtown, believe it or not. I said, honey, you're going the wrong way. Turn around, go up to your aunt, because we happen to have somebody in the city. But that's an important thing to develop. How do you get in touch with people, or what's the plan?
Right, so it's not a heavy lift, right? You're sitting at the dinner table. bring it up. Have the conversation. People should know, whether you are tech savvy or not, that text messaging will go through more easily than a phone call. So if you don't like to text on a regular basis, that's fine. But in the event of an emergency and you needed to communicate with another member of your family, the best way to do that is with a text message. And something very simple, just, I am okay. You know, just to let them know that you're okay, or to let them know where you're at. You know, a lot of times when we talk about family communication plans, you know, you have a mom and dad, and they're both working, and they've got three kids, and they're, you know, different stages, and they're all over the place. Another good idea is to have an out-of-town phone number. Like, my kids know that if there's an emergency and the phone lines are down in our area, if we can't get through, to call Aunt Lori in Arizona. So they can call Aunt Lori and say, hey, Aunt Lori, you know, if my mom calls, tell her I'm okay, I'm here. You know, in the same respect, I could call her, oh, my God, I haven't heard from the kids, tell them we're here. You know, so sometimes the long-distance phone call will go through, whereas the local phone call will not.
Yeah, everything locally is dead. That is a huge idea.
That, it is.
Know, you
sure
call
is.
California, wherever the person is, out of the neighborhood, because New York was a mess, but you could get on your cell phone, you could get a call to California.
It's true.
Okay.
If you have somebody, you know. And I didn't know about the texting thing.
It doesn't require any money. It's a two-minute conversation.
Wow.
Hey, guys, here's the contact. Put this phone number in your phone. If we ever can't reach each other, we're all going to call this number.
Right. Perfect. A lot of seniors do have pets. Birds, cats, dogs, whatever. That's as much planning, if not more, than if you have a child. And sometimes you forget to think of it in the same light.
Because the pet is going to do its own thing, and you have to, you have to impose your will on certainly my pet. My wife and I have a little cat.
Okay.
And she goes through a regimen. Certain times of the day, she will go in certain places, and if you go to get her at a different time of the day, she's not having any of it. It's just
right. I understand.
You know, they're obsessive creatures, and so it's difficult. But you have to look after them. That's what they're there for.
I think the biggest problem with pets is that people won't leave their pets. Right? They are a member of their family. I have two dogs. I would not leave my house without them in an emergency. So in advance, I need to have a pet bowl, a pet leash. When I put my water in my preparedness kit, I have to put enough water for that pet, you know, a toy, a blanket. And then if there's a possibility, if I'm not going to a family member or a friend's house and I'm going to a shelter, then I should have researched in advance which shelters in my area accept pets. And
a lot of them. Oh, not every shelter will accept a pet.
Not all of them will accept a pet.
Okay.
Some of them I know they're working on, and it depends on the county and the state, but trying to have two shelters set up next to each other, so one for people and one for pets, where the people would still be responsible for going and feeding their pets and walking them and whatnot. But when it came time, you know, at night or whatever, they still had to be crated. So you need to have a cage for your pet, some sort of carrier for your pet. And then that takes a little bit of the burden off the people running the shelters, because they also have separate facilities. I believe they're called carts. And I'll be darned if I can remember what it stands for right now. But they basically are animal rescue teams during a disaster that will help with the pets. So definitely do your homework in advance.
Right, and that's important because it's a family member. You know, if you don't have a pet, you're not considering it a family member, but it is. And the people who have them have to pay attention. As much as it was a six-month child, you got to take care of the baby in an emergency. The dog, the cat, et cetera, doesn't know what to do. And probably they're frantic, too, if it's a fire,
absolutely,
if it's something crazy.
Absolutely.
A very big one, and we have a few minutes left, a very big one is the decision to stay or go. And you read about after the fact that the family didn't go, and then it was putting other people's lives in risk to save them. And then people have left and nothing happened. And I don't know the answer on that one.
Well, I think if the professionals, the emergency responders, your police, your fire, your Office of Emergency Management is telling you to evacuate, you need to evacuate. And it's very easy to evacuate if you've already made a plan, if you already have a kit, right? If you've already researched, you know, where you're going to go with your pet, I would say evacuate. The other thing that we don't talk about is a lot is sheltering in place. So there are some emergencies where it would be safer to stay where you're at. And then there are other times where you not only have to stay where you're at, but maybe harden your facility to outside contaminants. And people should understand the difference is that sometimes if an emergency responder says, shelter in place, seal your doors and windows, you know, it's not safe to come out, then you need to stay shelter in place, stay inside.
Well, that's the thing I think that's most important. The government is giving direction. And if they're asking you to leave, I agree. Leave. I mean, these people that stay, that put other people's lives at risk. And I didn't even know about the other one, sheltering in place. I had that circled, actually, in your preparedness steps. So it's something's happening outside that will actually hurt you more than staying inside. So listen,
you know,
to them.
Sometimes you've gone through a storm, and it's not as bad as predicted. And the next storm comes, and you say, well, the last storm wasn't so bad. I'll stick around, you know. And it's hard to turn your back on your home where you've lived for 10, 20, 30 years. Mm-hmm. So I can understand people refusing to leave. But the problem, as John points out, is you're putting other people in danger when they have to come and get you when it's
right.
When it's time to go, you know. I rue that when I see first responders who are really putting their lives in danger to rescue people who should have gotten out when they were told to get out.
Right. I agree. Yep. Actually,
and, you know, a lot of what we've been talking about is storms, but, you know, they're all hazards to consider when you're taking these preparedness steps. That's why I bring up sheltering in place.
Right. I didn't even pay attention to that until I say I spotted it and I didn't understand, and you made it a little bit clearer. Believe it or not, our time is up.
I
it goes so fast. And I want to thank Deborah so much, who is helping people understand what to do before and during and after a disaster. And unfortunately, the way things are going in the world, we're going to see them more and more. And it doesn't mean we have to be afraid of them. We just have to be prepared for them. So, Deborah Casa, I appreciate so much your calling in. I thank you so much. And we'll talk again. But right now, you've been listening to Senior Talk Radio on 88.1 FM and WCWP.org. We'll be right back.